please. Holy, all persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-1036, our fellow power attorney, petition versus federal energy legislature. Mr. Cole, the petitioner, the Carrefour, the respondent.
Good morning.
Your Honors, David Poe appearing on behalf of Petitioner Alcoa Power Generating, Inc. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my allotted time for rebuttal. Your Honor, this case represents a case in which we have under review two orders of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Those two orders of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission addressed a question that had been presented by the a petition for declaratory ruling that had been presented to the Commission with respect to the issue of waiver. Waiver under Section 401 of the Clean Water Act. That decision and determination in turn was based upon a May 7th, 2009 order of the Division of Water Quality of the state of North Carolina with respect to the issuance of a certificate pursuant to Section 401 of the Act. And it is our contention that the Commission failed, it made mistakes of law and fact with respect to its determination waiver.
Could you start by telling us what you think the effect of the state's December 1 revocation is on the issue before us, both the ripeness question and the merits?
Judge Tatel, our position is that it is irrelevant. The issue on review here is the...
And by the way, why did it take the party so long? This was issued on December 1, right? And we didn't get it until January 10.
Your Honor, I can't speak to all of that, but I had discussions with FERC counsel, and she can verify those.
All right, well, I'll talk to her about it. But could you explain to us why it makes no difference to the issues before us?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
The revocation order essentially, as you say, revokes the order of May 7th, 2009. However, it's a determination that is made essentially in December of last year and has no relevance to the reasonableness of the decisions by FERC, which were decisions that were made in October and in December, October of 2009 and January of 2010. So 10 months later, whatever decision is made by the state of North Carolina has no relevance to the reasonableness of FERC's decision making with respect to the issues that were before it.
It might have to do with ripeness, though.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure why it would have to do with ripeness, because the ripeness of the orders before the court now, the orders are ripe. FERC addressed the waiver question.
It might help your case on ripeness by suggesting that in the absence of our addressing this issue now, the North Carolina process will drag out interminably.
Yes, Your Honor. That certainly appears to be a prospect to be concerned about.
Right.
But if waiver has occurred, it has occurred, and the North Carolina process becomes a very different process after that.
But wasn't part of your argument on the merits that about the surety bond?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, that's now gone, right?
Well, it's gone to the extent that the revocation order
right.
Process has not
Right.
There's no need to comply with the surety bond.
We don't know whether there'll be a surety bond requirement at all anymore, do we?
That is certainly true, but
how would we write an opinion about a surety bond that doesn't exist anymore?
Well, the surety bond was a requirement, Your right. Honor, uh-huh. and it was a requirement that we believe rendered the order that was issued on May the 7th
right.
Essentially impossible to fulfill right, as
but,
written.
Right, and I thought that was an interesting argument you made, at least then the question about ripeness was, well, you know, maybe in the administrative proceedings that are ongoing, the surety bond requirement will be modified. But now it seems to me, the surety bond requirement is now gone.
Well, Your Honor.
So it seems even less ripe.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that the surety bond requirement is gone at all, because the revocation order says at the bottom that it is subject to being appealed within 60 days. Those 60 days have not yet run, and I believe it will be appealed. And if it's on appeal, ultimately the question of the revocation is either going to stand or it is going to fail. And those issues will, of course, be determined by the North Carolina courts. But to go back, the question is, how did FERC react to the May 7th order that was before it that contained this requirement that, first of all, could not be fulfilled within certainly the one-year requirement of Section 401. Moreover, according to the expert opinion that was provided with the petition for rehearing, was impossible to fulfill anyway. The fact that the revocation has occurred really has no bearing on the decision that the commission made when it was presented with the text of this order. And it was the Section 401 requirement is that the commission act within a reasonable period, not to exceed 1 year.
Well, let me try this out on you. It seems to me that the only thing that would help you at this point, your client, would be a ruling by this court that a water quality certificate is not effective under the statute if it requires any action by Alcoa beyond the one-year date, right?
No, Your Honor. No? Actually, our argument, I think, is much more complex than that. Because the certification order in question said that unless this bond was posted, the certification was not effective.
Right.
The order made no provision for what would happen if the bond was not posted.
Well, suppose we thought you were wrong about that. Would we have to decide anything else?
Well, Your Honor, we had actually three prongs of our argument with respect to the effectiveness of the bond. One was the fact that it could not be effective within 1 year, given the date in which it was issued, and the fact that it required these additional steps to be taken, and there was not time to take those steps within the one-year period. The second was the fact that it could not be fulfilled at all, if at all. And finally, there was the point about the fact that unless the bond were posted, the certificate itself was not effective at all. It was not a certificate until such time as the bond was posted according to the words that were in the order. And that's all that we have to go on.
The question of what the narrow issue is before. So if I understand your contention, it is that the facts are such that the commission was bound to find that North Carolina waived its legal right to grant or withhold certification when the year passed, and that therefore North Carolina water quality enforcement is out of the picture, or that is, ought to be treated as out of the picture. Have I got that wrong?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think that you are, I guess I lost the train of the first part of your
well,
question.
Well, I mean, the point is that so far as the merits of the impact on the merits of what North Carolina has done since that original call it certification. What it has done since then is of absolutely no consequence. And if you are right, what remains to be done is FERC's own proceedings, whatever they may be, relating to issuance of the license.
That would be correct.
And your argument further is, if I understand it, that suppose 5 years down the road, North Carolina issues you a certification that any kind of certification, it still doesn't count at all. It won't count then because it will have waived its certification rights.
Well, Your Honor, that is correct under Section 401, but it does not mean that North Carolina is without any ability to regulate water quality under state law and indeed under aspects of federal law. North Carolina will still have whatever power it may have, but it will lose the ability to use 401's provisions.
To hold up
the license, but more importantly, to condition the license for the provisions of water quality. The only reason I hesitated with your earlier question is that, as we said in our briefs, we think that the facts are clear here and that waiver has occurred. If the court, however, believes that there are additional facts that the commission needs to look at, the case can be remanded to the commission in order to look at those facts. The commission effectively treated this as summary judgment.
Right.
The petition for declaratory ruling was filed, and the commission did not put it out on public notice, did not seek any comment from any party, and instead, on its own motion, declared that waiver could not have occurred.
And on the substantive merits, what is it you see as making this condition legally different from the other conditions in the certification document?
Well, as we pointed out in our brief, this is the only condition in the certification order that the commission, that DWQ issued, that says that this certificate shall not be effective until this condition is fulfilled. All the other conditions that are in there don't say that.
Is this condition subsequent? Is that the?
This is a condition precedent to certification itself. Until such time as the bond is posted, there is no certificate, and the order makes no provision for what is going to happen if the bond is not posted. There is nothing in the order that says what will happen if the bond is not posted.
What about, I mean, aren't there loads of conditions in the certification that create obstacles all the way along the line?
There are conditions in any 401 certification for a hydroelectric project that become, under Section 401, terms and conditions of the license. That's
right.
The requirement under
right.
Section 401. And they require the licensee to do various things, again, once the license is issued.
Right.
Well, but this is the,
I mean,
this
I guess,
is.
I guess what I'm struggling with is why is there a legal difference between the uncertainties created by those conditions as opposed to the uncertainty created by this? I mean, certainly in terms of label, condition precedent versus condition subsequent, I understand that. The question is that such a powerful distinction as to render the commission's decision unreasonable or illegal?
And I would agree with you, Your Honor, that it is. And for this very reason,
it was a question for me.
And the distinction is that when you have conditions in the license, throughout the term of the license, the licensee has to comply with those conditions. It is known with some certainty as to what those conditions are and what the ongoing compliance requirements will be. In this particular case, because of the condition precedent, you don't know whether or not there is a certificate, and until such time as the commission either determines that waiver has occurred or it receives a certificate which is final and effective, the commission cannot issue a new license. The licensee is required to operate under an annual license.
Suppose. What about this? At 396 of the joint appendix, the NCDWQ reserves the right to require changes to the plan. This is the flow and reservoir elevation monitoring plan. I mean, that seems to just keep everything in suspense. Not everything, but it keeps something that looks very material in suspense, certainly until North Carolina has either exercised or refrained from exercising its authority there.
But, Your Honor, Section 401 itself, the language of Section 401, limits the ability of the state subsequently to amend its conditions. And that's actually in the text of the statute itself. The state may have some authority under state law to independently try to enforce parts of this order, and it certainly can do that. But it's not as part of the federal license that it can amend its conditions.
So this power to amend is ineffective under federal law.
Your Honor, it to the extent it has any effect, it has to be in accordance with the requirements of 401.
Okay.
401 says that certain kinds of modifications can be made under certain circumstances, but they're very limited.
All right.
And it cannot, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It doesn't change what is actually in the license. They cannot change the license after the initial certification.
But what about uncertainty in the, as to whether Alcoa or any other licensee has met the conditions that are set forth, the unchanged conditions?
Your Honor, whether or not a licensee meets conditions of a license is up to the commission, and the commission has separate and plenary enforcement authority with respect to any of the conditions of the license.
So, all right, so the commission here took the position that under its interpretation, the state had acted within 1 year, and therefore the commission could proceed with its licensing process. And the state, in its brief, takes the position it would at that point be up to the state to come in and enforce this surety bond condition if it had not already been complied with. And I understand you say that's a change of position by the state, but in any event, is that the way you understand FERC? And I can ask FERC's attorney too, but is that your understanding of what FERC had in mind here?
Your Honor, it's not clear to me that FERC had that in mind.
What I'm getting at is if the state says we issue a license but we want a surety bond of $240 million and you have to go get the bond, your argument in part is, well, it's impossible to get the bond because we don't have enough details about what the state wants and the nature of a bond. Isn't that your argument?
That is part of our argument, yes, Your Honor.
So in the real world, wouldn't your client sit down with the state and negotiate this out?
Yes, Your Honor. That's exactly what they would do. And if it were
why would it be impossible to meet?
Well, it's impossible to meet as a form of certification
as of the 1 year,
the way it's written, and that's what our argument is predicated on.
Right.
We're arguing that it isn't within the power of APGI to come forward and to issue the bond. It requires the actions of other people, including the surety party that they come up with, including the Department of Insurance, which under the terms is required to approve the surety, and also, most importantly, including DWQ itself, who has to formulate conditions eventually in order that would be acceptable to a surety in order to be able to have a bond put into place. All of that is further decision-making, which would have to take place, if at all, outside of the 1 year time period in which the 401 gives the state to exercise its conditioning authority. But
the state has exercised its conditioning authority. I'm not quite sure why we would interpret the statute the way you want, given that the way the system is set up is that Congress has ensured, you know, the state's primary role in developing and imposing these conditions in the licensing process, right? So what would be the reason for imposing this requirement? Why would that be consistent with what Congress intended here?
Well, Congress intended that there would be a certificate that it would be that you would have something that would be a basis upon which the commission could act. And this condition is a condition precedent before there actually is a certificate. And what's more is the order makes no provision for what happens if there is no, if the bond isn't put into place. And it that, you know, we don't know whether that's going to occur.
Yeah, well, we're dealing with a statute here. So let's go back to the language of the statute. It says, it only says that if the state fails to act. It doesn't say if the state fails to grant a fully effective certificate. It says if it fails to act.
Right. And our argument is
I understand. So your argument is that means a fully effective certificate, but that isn't what the statute says. And so our obligation, it seems to me, is to interpret the statute in a way that fulfills Congress's purpose here, which was to recognize the primary role the state has in water quality certification. And true, if the state just said in its action on the last day, we'll act in a year, you would have a good case. But here, I just don't see why we would interpret the statute the way you want us to in view of what Congress is trying to accomplish here in this case.
Well, Your Honor, my response would be that's in effect what they did do. They said, we'll act sometime within the next 90 days to give you those conditions
they need to have in order to get a bond. Very specific surety bond requirement.
It's not very specific. That's the problem with it, Your Honor. It doesn't contain all the provisions. It requires further clarification at a minimum from the state.
Let me
ask you about that. That argument I understand. In fact, I'm going to ask FERC about its statement in its decision that it's not bothered by the fact that the state might have to act again. But that brings me right back to ripeness. We're now talking about possibly ruling on a action by FERC, namely, we aren't bothered by this, in the context of a situation where that surety bond may never see the light of day again, or it may have different terms.
Or, Your Honor, it may be irrelevant if this court finds that waiver, in fact, has occurred.
That brings me back to the very first question I asked you, which is the only thing that would really help you is if we ruled that there has to be a fully effective certificate by the last day of the one-year period. And because the surety bond no longer exists, I'm not sure how we would build that into our analysis. How would we do that?
Your Honor, I guess I'm still having difficulty understanding the basis of your concern. Uh-huh. The issues don't go away just simply because...
The ripeness principle is designed to make sure we only decide cases when they're actually fully developed and ready for a decision. Right? That's the purpose.
Yes, Your Honor. So. Well, and the reason that it doesn't apply here is that these issues are fully developed. FERC addressed the waiver issue, and it's not going to, there's no reason to think that it would ever readdress the issue. And as we pointed out in our brief.
They never have to. This surety bond may not evolve out of the state appeals processes that are now going on. There may be a very different condition. It may not have that obligation. It may have all the detail you're looking for.
But, Your Honor, that would be true whether or not the revocation order ever occurred.
Why don't we hear from counsel for respondent? Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jennifer Hammerkale for the commission. I want to start by answering Judge Tatel's question related to the revocation notice. And just quickly to say that the reason that it was filed a month after it was issued is because it didn't come to my attention until the middle of December, and then I needed to contact all of the parties and figure out whether they would be opposed to filing it, and we took 2 weeks to negotiate a letter and the filing of the revocation notice. So with the
holidays, I just think in the future, you know, since if FERC appears before this court pretty regularly, that you know, it's really important to get these developments to us right away. And
yes, Your Honor, I agree. And with regards to
some of us looked at this case, you know, way before we got this January 10th. We got this. So
yes, Your Honor, we will definitely try to do better next time. With regard to whether how the revocation notice impacts the ripeness, it certainly brings a lot of uncertainty to this case. And
how does it bring any uncertainty to Alcoa's claim? Alcoa's claim is completely baked in at this point, right? There either is or is not a waiver.
That's correct, Your Honor.
We don't need a crystal ball to resolve that issue.
Its basic claim is that waiver has occurred, and whether revocation of the certification has occurred doesn't seem to impact that. But the whole state proceeding and the revocation notice along with that brings a lot of uncertainty as to whether Alcoa will actually achieve its ends here. It seeks a commission licensing order, and if the revocation notice were canceled and if the stay were lifted and a certification came before the commission, then the commission could act in the licensing proceeding and issue a licensing order and give Alcoa what it seeks.
On its theory, and actually as I look at your decision, I'm not sure if it isn't the case now, certainly on Alcoa's theory, the certification problem is out of the way, right? The commission doesn't have to wait around for what North Carolina is doing. It's done. It's waived on Alcoa's theory.
But Alcoa has raised several material factual issues here that take this out of the purely legal statutory interpretation. It's raised the impossibility issue, which is
well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I guess you say it's raised a bunch of issues, the impossibility one being one of them. But at least there's a core claim that the existence of a condition precedent itself, regardless of fulfillability and so forth, means there has been a waiver. That's never going to change, right?
That in itself is not going to change, but Alcoa could receive what it wants here in this proceeding. It could get what it's seeking and get a licensing order from the commission.
Well, on its theory, it can get a licensing order, perhaps not today, but promptly, right? As opposed to what may be years of litigation, administrative and judicial, in North Carolina.
Yes. That's its theory that it can get a waiver.
There's but years of uncertainty versus more or less instant knowledge.
But there are other ways in which this is unfit for review because of the raising of material factual issues. And Alcoa is seeking a remand to the commission for additional fact-finding, which that raises an issue of how the commission.
I'm actually not sure that ripeness cases anything about ripeness requirements require that the issue be one which, once the court has spoken, may not require further fact finding.
If this court narrowly looks at just the waiver issue and doesn't entertain any of Alcoa's other arguments, then that may be a purely legal, but many material factual disputes have arisen in this case and before this court, and that takes it out of the purely legal construct and statutory interpretation.
Yeah, I want to go back to the cases on that. But let me, you talk in your order on rehearing, certification has been issued. So does that mean that the commission now regards the certification requirement as met? Met in the sense of North Carolina has provided certification.
Yes.
It does. So then the certification, the presence or absence of certification is not now an obstacle to the commission issuing its license. Maybe all kinds of other obstacles, but not that.
The obstacle is the state stay. The commission has a policy that it won't go forward with a licensing order while a certification has been stayed pending appeal at the state level. So the state stay and now the revocation notice is really...
So what would happen if, suppose there hadn't been a stay? I take it then the commission would have granted the license with this bond as a condition?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, there's no assurance that Alcoa is going to receive a license here, so it wouldn't necessarily have granted the license.
Why wouldn't it have treated it like any other condition and simply granted the license subject to the bond?
It would issue a licensing order. Yes, it would issue a licensing order, and it would treat it as any other condition.
Oh, okay.
Unless the issue of ineffectiveness were raised to the commission.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, because the commission says... if your answer had been yes, the commission would treat this as any other condition, build it into the license. And then if there's, I presume, questions about details and ability to get the bond, the commission would negotiate that with Alcoa just as it does any other condition, right? If there hadn't been a stay. Is that correct?
Well, the condition isn't negotiated between Alcoa and the commission. The condition needs to be negotiated between the state and Alcoa.
Well, now that's a problem to me because, suppose we're not talking about this. Suppose we're talking about just a routine condition. Say that they issue the water quality certificate and the condition requires a certain level of, that certain kind of chemical doesn't exceed a certain amount. Okay?
Okay.
And FERC grants a license and puts that condition in, right? That's what you would do?
Yes.
Okay, and a year from now, there's some question about what that condition means. It's too general. Wouldn't that be worked out between the commission and Alcoa?
Yes, that would actually be worked out between all three parties.
Well, but the legal responsibility at that point is the commission's, not the state's. It's a condition of a commission license.
Yes, but the commission would have to.
You may want to know what North Carolina thinks, right?
Yes.
But it's the commission's condition that's in the license.
Yes, the obligations are between the commission.
Okay, so why wouldn't that also be true
to the state, right?
Judge Tatel, do you want to finish? No, we're just talking over each other. Judge Tatel, can you finish?
Yeah, let me just. So.
Your question, I mean.
Yeah, so why wouldn't you treat this the same way, the bond. In other words, were it not for a stay, you grant the license, and if Alcoa can't get the bond, then it would be a condition that would be worked out between the commission and Alcoa. And sure, you'd want to know what North Carolina thinks, but it's your condition. Now,
I think there's some indication in the order that that is what the commission would do. If you look at paragraph 19, it says, that's of the rehearing order. Paragraph 19, JA 618, where the commission says that it does not regard the effectiveness provision as a cause for delaying license issuance.
Right. Yeah, in fact, it says, we are not troubled by the prospect that once an approved surety bond is located, further decisions may be required by the division.
So there, I think there are really...
That's a real problem, isn't it?
there are really two issues here. One is whether the bond condition is possible or not, and whether a license, whether a certification needs to be effective, consistent with the license ordering issuing or before the license order issues. So with regard to that first issue of whether the bond is possible or not, the commission found that it was burdensome, but it was not an impossible condition. And with regard to...
Where did the commission find that?
If you look at note 7 of the rehearing order, this is JA 616 and 617, it says that Alcoa has the option whether to pursue satisfying the condition, and under the facts of this case, its argument that the condition could not have been fulfilled in a timely manner is not entirely convincing.
All right, but following on, well, Judge Williams, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Well, I guess so can I answer the effectiveness part of that?
Of course, yeah.
So with regard to impossibility, the commission said this is burdensome but not impossible. With regard to whether it would accept a certification that was on its face ineffective, the commission said that that was premature and that that was actually that was never raised by Alcoa.
So how would the commission proceed? It would issue, just assume that the only thing holding up issuance of the license to Alcoa is the state water quality certification.
Uh-huh.
So the commission has ruled that the state has acted. The commission has said it would go ahead and issue the license, and the license would have this surety bond condition in it. So Alcoa gets the license. Then what happens?
And the...
The condition's there.
The condition's there, and the effectiveness provision is there as well?
90 days.
So that's a hypothetical that we don't know that's actually going to occur.
I just want to understand what you understand the commission to have decided in this case when it said
because
the state has done all it needed to do within 1 year under Section 401. We can go ahead and issue the license.
So the commission decided that the bond condition was not impossible.
Yes.
And that in the hypothetical, it would have incorporated that condition. But the question then is whether there's an effective certification. And the commission declined under its discretion.
I understand. And when would the commission make that decision? I mean, when would it be right in the commission's view?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer, given that there's a revocation of the certification. And this goes to whether this is ripe for this court to hear, because...
I know. And I thought what our questions are trying to focus on is the fact that if we agree with the petitioner's interpretation, then there's something to decide here. But then there's this additional element of, I'm trying to understand that if we were to decide in the petitioner's favor, and FERC has to decide whether or not, in fact, the petitioner will get the license, are we still in sort of this area of uncertainty?
It's a limbo.
Ignore the state stay for the moment, all right? But we're still in a period of limbo. And so I'm trying to understand what Congress had in mind when it said the state has a year, and FERC's regulations said you have a year to grant or deny. When I first read that, I thought, well, that meant that the state has a year, it grants or denies, and FERC moves right ahead. And FERC's rehearing order suggests that's exactly what it means, that FERC says North Carolina's done what it had to do, we will move ahead, and if we decide to issue the license, we may or may not put this condition in there. I'm not clear on that yet.
Right, and the commission was waiting for the state appeals to come to fruition, where that condition could come out altogether. They could settle in principle, and that settlement in principle that they had would come to fruition. That could erase this bond condition.
So you say this is a policy of the commission, that if the state acts consistent with 401, but then it stays its action,
yes,
then the commission will not issue the license.
That's correct. And that policy is stated in paragraph 15 of the rehearing order at JA 616. If the court is interested in other FERC orders where we've stated that, I can reference those.
All right.
Do you think, let me ask you about, is this what 401, do you agree with this statement of what 401 means? It means that the state does not waive its rights to issue order quality certificate if its certificate includes conditions which require future action by the licensee and by FERC.
Yes,
but what? Okay, but what it can't do is issue a certificate that requires further action by the state.
No.
Do you agree with that?
No. Further action by the state?
Yeah.
I think Alcoa doesn't even agree with that in its reply brief.
No, I'm saying that it would not be an effective certificate if it required further action by the state. Do you agree with that?
No, Your Honor. It would be. The effectiveness and requiring further action by the state are two separate things. Uh-huh. Many, as Judge Williams was pointing out, many of these conditions require further action by the state. The state has to come in and approve the monitoring plan that's proposed.
Yes, but in terms of preconditions to the issuance of a license by FERC, I thought you said at one point, and it was when you we're about to go into paragraph 19 of the rehearing order, that it would be the commission that for purposes of deciding whether there was a certification or not, the commission, not anything in North Carolina, would decide whether the bond condition had or had not been fulfilled. Is that right? And if so, where do you say it? Where does the commission say it?
Not whether it had or had not been fulfilled, but whether it was an impossible condition or not. So the commission has a very, it can't look into the substance of the certification. That's what American Rivers tells us. But when it's implementing the Clean Water Act, it has to take a facial look at these things, and that's what it did here. It looked at the affidavit from the bond manager, and it determined that it was a burdensome requirement, but that it was not impossible, that Alcoa and the state could get together and figure out what needed to be done to fulfill.
The argument that the condition could not have been fulfilled in a timely manner is not entirely convincing. It seems to be
so. It's
falls far short of saying that it was possible of fulfillment, right?
I think
and not entirely convincing.
So it is somewhat convincing.
Right.
Right. So it's somewhat convincing, and again, this goes to a timely manner, whereas, and the commission has just talked before that about Alcoa having 8 months to satisfy this instead of the 90 days. So the timeline is flexible, and that's not unusual in the incorporation of certifications into licensing orders, because timelines get missed all the time. And so the commission has had to operate in a way that allows some flexibility with regard to timelines. But yes, here in footnote 7, it says the commission was somewhat convinced that the bond requirement couldn't be fulfilled in 90 days. But Alcoa had 8 months at that point at the issuance of this rehearing order to fulfill it. I want to touch on just very briefly.
I guess I'm still at sea as to the role of the two different agencies, because I mean, I understood from Mr. Poe that there's the licensee's relationship with the state authorities, And that goes on under state law, and all kinds of horrible things can happen in the course of it. There's also the license. And I just want to know what they can the commission say, for our purposes, the applicant or the licensee is in full compliance with the conditions of the certification, and therefore, for FERC purposes, it's got a good license.
The commission generally doesn't make a finding that the licensee is in full compliance when it issues a licensing order. So I guess I'm not understanding your question.
Well, okay. We have things down the road after a license is issued.
Right.
And state says they're completely failing to fulfill. What does the commission do then?
Then the state comes to the commission and says, please enforce these conditions. And the commission enforces the conditions.
Okay, so that seems to be the opposite of what Mr. Poe told me, because Mr. Poe depicted a situation, I thought, where the state water quality people were independently enforcing, stopping things, issuing orders, whatnot. But that's not true?
The Clean Water Act has the enforcement mechanism in it. In Section 401D, it talks about how conditions are enforced.
In other words, there are two separate ways, under the federal or the state. And I thought Mr. Poe was talking about the state mechanism that could exist.
Can I just follow up on
way over time.
Yeah, just one question. In response to my question about whether the state could act after the certification, you gave an example of the monitoring plan. So, and you said the state would have to approve the monitoring plan. Is that what you said?
Yes, that's in this certification before the court.
Right. And is that pretty typical of these?
Yes. Yes.
So how does that work? So let's assume there hadn't been an appeal.
Okay.
And you granted the license, right?
Okay.
And then they submit their monitoring plan. The state can disapprove that monitoring plan?
I believe so, Your Honor.
It's not a question for FERC?
It's not a question for FERC.
Why don't we
Well, now I'm completely confused. Okay.
Let's hear from the state.
Thank you, Your Honors.
That might confuse us even more.
I know. Counsel for Intervenor North Carolina, can you clear all this up?
I'd be happy to if it was that easy. I hope
yes,
I can.
I thought that might be the response.
May it please the court, Mark Bernstein for the state of North Carolina. I'd like to focus on the bigger picture at the outset. What APGI is seeking here is a 50-year license. In fact, the minimum term under the Federal Power Act is 30 years. The purpose of Section 401, as has been recognized, is to ensure the state's paramount role with regard to regulation of water quality at federally licensed facilities. The waiver provision is in derogation of that primary purpose, and therefore we feel it should be construed narrowly. Mr. Poe has suggested that the state has sort of concurrent enforcement authority at these federally licensed facilities once the federal license is issued. That may be the case with regard to Section 404 permits, because the Clean Water Act does not have broad preemptive effect. The Federal Power Act, however, does. Therefore, the Section 401 certification is extremely important to the states with regard to the Federal Power Act, because it stands as the state's primary mechanism to affect its water quality laws at these federally licensed facilities. We would submit that it's not in keeping with Congress's intent that on a record such as this, the state should be deprived of its paramount role as regulator of water quality at this facility for the next half a century.
We're trying to understand how the system actually works. And it appears that the commission has some role in the enforcement of the conditions of a certification, but it was the commission was somewhat obscure as to the role of the state authorities.
We would agree with the commission that once the license is issued, The primary enforcement is with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. The state, as Ms. Amarkel indicated, can go to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and ask that a condition be enforced, and the federal government can take enforcement action at that time.
But the state cannot, despite language in the permit that seems to reserve all kinds of rights to the state.
With regard to any specific language in the certification, the state does reserve whatever authority is specifically reserved in the certification. For example, if where the certification says the licensee shall go to the state for approval of a certain plan, then we believe that the licensee does has to go to the state for approval of that particular plan.
But that's a condition of the license, right?
That becomes
a condition of the license.
Exactly. Right. That requirement that approval become from the state becomes a condition of the federal license, and that's why the state has that role.
Okay, so what would have happened in this case if there had not been an appeal, FERC had granted the license, and Alcoa couldn't get the bond?
If Alcoa couldn't get the bond, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, I think, would have the authority to enforce that provision, to force them to get the bond. We also think that, you know, the state has provisions in the certification that allows it to relook at things where there's an issue with regard to proper implementation. And we believe that the state could go back and look at those issues and determine whether that bond condition should be reformed or in fact, waived.
On its own?
Well, there would be a process we would have to go through.
But would it have to go to FERC to get that done? In other words, does the state have any... Other than authority granted to it by FERC as part of a condition, does the state have any continuing authority?
No, because under Federal Power Act cases, the state has only the authority in the Clean Water Act.
No, I'm talking about under the license.
Because of the Clean Water Act, those conditions are included.
They're all in the license.
Whatever authority is in the license. Right.
So when FERC said it wasn't troubled that the state might have to act again, what did it mean?
I think what FERC was talking about was that the state and the licensee might have to get together and determine further details of the bond condition, because as Mr. Croyle indicated in his affidavit, all he said was that the bond condition would require, you know, additional specific elements and language to be an implementable condition. So we would see that as a healthy relationship between a regulated party and the regulator, that the parties should get together. We have to remember this is a 50-year license, and not all circumstances can be foreseen. So that sort of dialogue among the parties is as a sign of a healthy relationship of the implementation of a license, and not something that should deprive the state of its role as regulator of water quality for the next 50 years.
All right. Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for petitioner. I'll give you a couple of minutes here.
Judge Williams, with respect to your questions about the each side having relative authority with respect to certain aspects of water quality, yes, they do. But in the context of Section 401, Section 401 is the process by which state water quality standards, if the state chooses to exercise them, become conditions of the license. And that's really what we have been talking about.
But you would agree with Mr. Bernstein's answer to me, saying that where the certification says state approval must be obtained for X, Y, or Z, then that requirement, that condition, becomes a federal requirement which is enforced by the commission. No?
Your Honor, I'm not sure of that one. I believe that Mr. Bernstein is mostly correct when he says that the Federal Power Act has preemptive effect with respect to certain things. One of the problems, of course, with the way in which Section 401 cases have been determined is that states have been very aggressive in seeking to put conditions in the license that require their prior approval with respect to certain actions. And it remains uncertain, I believe, as to the full extent to which the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission can and will enforce all of them.
But as long as it's a condition of the FERC license and not an independent responsibility or right the state has, why wouldn't that be perfectly appropriate for FERC to approve the license on those terms?
Your Honor, I don't know why it wouldn't be appropriate.
It would be, right? So FERC could put into it, the licensee has to develop a monitoring plan satisfactory to the state. Would that be okay?
Yes. Okay. Your Honor, but let me point out that we've been talking
and
about conditions.
And suppose this thing said you have to have a bond in a certain amount satisfactory to the state. Same thing?
I don't know that, Your Honor.
Why would that be any different?
It could be different just simply because the Federal Power Act doesn't necessarily give FERC the authority to enforce a bond condition. I don't know the answer to your question as a hypothetical.
Oh.
What we've been talking about here are conditions subsequent, ongoing conditions. That's not what we have in our case. We have a condition precedent to there ever being certification.
But FERC counsel told us that had there not been an appeal, FERC would have granted the license subject to the bond requirement.
Yes, Your Honor.
Would that, right?
I understand that that's what she said.
And you don't think that's the case?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Oh. But isn't that pretty critical to what we have to decide here?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know why it is critical to what you have to decide,
because
what's
it makes
in front
a big
of
difference
you
on whether it makes a huge difference on whether what the state did when it issued its certificate was a waiver or not.
Your Honor,
impose conditions that FERC would build into the license, then I don't see how it could conceivably be considered a waiver.
Your Honor, it is not the same as the other conditions. That is the point that we've been trying to drive home in our brief and in our argument, excuse me, because it simply says that the entire certification is dependent upon satisfaction of this condition before there is a certification.
But Judge Tatel and I have understood Commission counsel say quite the opposite,
right,
to say that there can be this condition, call it a condition precedent, and the commission, it's a certification, so the certification requirement is met, the commission, but for this stay at the state level, the commission would go forward and issue the license, assuming that the other criteria for license issuance are met.
And Your Honor, when they do that, they're simply saying there's no difference between the wording of Condition 7 and the wording of all the other conditions.
They are.
Language of the order, we believe, has to be respected. I think that that's really what the precedents of this court and others, I mean, when I say the order of the state. The state, I think we have to presume, meant what it said, and that it intended to make Condition 7 read differently than all the other conditions. And so we have to take the statement by the Department of Water Quality in the order as meaning what it says. And it says there is no certificate.
But it might mean one thing for one purpose and a different thing for another purpose. It might mean for FERC purposes there is a certification. Certification bristling with conditions, precedent and subsequent, but still a certification.
But Your Honor, I mean, not to belabor the point, we don't believe that that's possible. We don't believe that's reasoned decision making. We believe that FERC, for example, when FERC counsel said that the commission essentially didn't believe us, well, we believe they didn't believe us. So footnote 7 in the order is a statement that says the fact that it hasn't happened in 8 months makes us wonder why this is an impossible condition. Well, if it's an impossible condition, you would expect that it hadn't happened in 8 months.
All right. I think we have your argument. We'll take the case under advisement.
Yes, Your Honor.